Session number 10465, Rule 1.
Colonel Woodward, Rule 1.
Can you tell me, first of all, Colonel, when it was and how it was that you came to join the Indian Army?
Yes, I was called up in England in 1939, and after a period with the Lincolnshire Regiment in the new barracks at Lincoln, I was sent to 168 Octu in Aldershot, and towards the completion of our training there, we were asked to nominate three regiments, which were regiments of our choice. Having been at Lincoln, where I found it an extremely cold place in December, January, February, March 1940, I decided there must be somewhere warmer, and so I thought of India. Now, I had an uncle who had a very great friend in the Indian Army, and I rang him up and asked him if his friend would mind if I put down his regiment as my regiment of choice. My uncle obviously couldn't get in touch with the friend, but what he did do was he said, yes, well, put his name down, put his regiment down, and I'll write to him and tell him, which is what I did, and I found myself in the 16th Punjab Regiment.
Can you tell me what the Punjabi soldiers were like as soldiers? Did they make good soldierly material?
Yes, they were very, very good soldiers. I served mainly with the Punjabi Musliman companies, and I found them extremely likeable and with somewhat less prejudice than certainly the Dogras, of whom each of our battalions had one company, or the Sikhs, which we had the second company. The Muslims, they were... You better stop there. They are very quiet, well-behaved soldiers, and throughout the time I spent with them, which in fact I was only from 1940 to 42, I was with the regiment, we had no trouble whatsoever with them. I wouldn't want to enlarge on that at the moment.
What kind of prejudice were you referring to in relation to the Dogras and Sikhs?
The Dogras have considerable prejudices in regard to, or did have at that time. They've got over them, obviously, now. But they had them in regard to caste. There were difficulties over food. And the Sikhs, of course... consider themselves to be by far and away the best in the battalion, which led to a lot of friction from time to time.
Some people have alleged that the Indian Army practiced divide and rule because they put different religions or castes into different units. What have you to say about that kind of accusation?
I don't think that it had much effect in regard to the ruling of India. We had no trouble in the main within the country when I was there, and although for the period during the war I was mainly out of India, back in India itself it was reasonably quiet. There was periods when the Congress were trying to pull up the railway lines for a short time, but apart from that, it was one of the periods of greater stability than at other times.
But would the Muslims, Sikhs and Hindus have mixed together if they'd have been placed in the same unit? Do you think there would have been any problems?
We did have one problem with... between the Muslims and the Hindus and the Dogras. it was caused by one of the subedars of our Muslim companies being killed, and the battalion in question was taken out of the division just before we went down into Arakan. The person that did it was thought to be a Dogra, and from this point of view, I suppose one must be very critical of the Dogras.
Was it a private who'd killed him?
No.
Somebody of equivalent rank?
Yes.
And had they been in the same unit?
They were in the same unit, yes. Same battalion.
And serving in the same company?
No, they were above that.
You were in India in 1942.
Yes.
That was the time of the Quit India movement.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find much hostility shown to you as a British person in India at that time?
None at all. In 1942, I was first of all in Pune on a course. At that time, we had one time when we stood to, and this was when Mahatma Gandhi and Pandit Nehru were arrested, and they were put in jail in Pune. But as soon as that had passed, we carried on with the course, and I went back to Northwest India within about 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, up in Northwest India, there was no trouble at all.
Were your sepoys at all affected by political agitation?
No, we were by this time in the division, and training for war. We were doing large-scale company, battalion, and even divisional exercises. At the end of 1942, we did a very large divisional exercise from Hazara district in the northwest frontier through to Peshawar and to Fort Jamrud, which obviously there was no possibility of any of the soldiers or any personnel at all taking up political opinions at that time. We were just getting ready for war, and that was our only thought.
What was the reputation of the Japanese soldier in India amongst the Indian Army at that time?
Obviously, they were thought of as being almost supermen. They had, in Malaya, they had conducted an extremely fine campaign, and they'd overcome a much larger British force. Therefore, all the Indian Army were very aware of what they were up against. The main point, of course, was the lack of training. We were very fortunate in that our division, having finished up on the northwest frontier at the end of 1942, in the beginning of 1943, we went down to Chindwara, where we had the advantage of having 8 months in the jungle of Sioni Hills near Chindwara. And we did 8 months very, very tough jungle training. So when we went down into Arakan, we were not only properly trained in warfare, but we were properly trained in jungle warfare.
Were you spoken to by veterans of the 1942 campaign against the Japanese?
Oh, yes. We would have a number of people coming up. There weren't a lot available. Most of the Singapore people had... there were some got out of Singapore, but they were largely prisoners of war. But there were the people who'd come back through Burma certainly were available. In fact, one or two of them, of course, eventually came into the 14th Army General Slim, of course, is an outstanding example. General Smythe was another one. And the 17th Indian Division came back through Burma and then was part of the Four Corps when we attacked down through Imphal in 1944.
What kind of lessons did they impress on you that had been learned from fighting the Japanese in 42?
Well, the big lesson that we all had to learn was that by being cut off by the Japanese was not the end of the world. And the 7th Indian Division, of course, demonstrated this in their first battle in the Arakan in 1944. In Malaya, that as soon as they had been cut off by the Japanese, they would immediately try to re-establish the LOC. And they had no alternative form of supply, and it was inevitable that they were, once they got involved in a continual withdrawal, they were going to go on with that withdrawal. And of course, the only place it could stop was Singapore. Obviously, there was bad generalship there, but that wasn't our problem.
Did Odd Wingate ever come round? Did you ever meet him during the training?
Odd Wingate had a special force set up, which I think the majority of the regular divisions thought was an expensive luxury, and we've always believed that General Slim thought this too. There were enormous resources were put into the Chindits, resources which otherwise would have come to the Indian divisions. In the end, whilst they had one or two successes, the great majority of the success of the 14th Army and 15th Corps came from the regular Indian and British divisions.
So, did you meet him?
I didn't meet him, no.
Did you ever come across people who had met him who disliked him? Or conversely, people who had met him who were great admirers of his?
I don't think we even thought very much about him. I served for 2 months under Jack Masters, when Jack Masters was Brigade Major of 114 Brigade, one of our one of the brigades of the 7th Div. He then went away and became, I think, Brigade Major to Brigadier Lentaine. Brigadier Lentaine.
What memories have you got of Jack Masters as a person?
As a person and a soldier, he was a very good Brigade Major. He was... I always got on very well with him. I was in on Brigade Headquarters for this 2 months, and in fact it was he that I was the liaison officer from my battalion to Brigade Headquarters, and he and presumably Brigadier Roberts were the people who selected me to go as the liaison officer of the Brigade to Divisional Headquarters.
Did he come across as a very erudite character?
I saw him mainly only in regard to training and that type of type of thing. But yes, he was a very clear thinking, and he obviously had been well trained and had obviously had a good education behind him. And so I was always happy talking to him.
Can you tell me more about the training at Chindwara, whether it was hard and how the sepoys took to it?
Well, of course, by this time I was on divisional headquarters. The sepoys, as far as I was aware, they certainly all took to it very well. There was a certain fear of the jungle to begin with, but by the time we'd finished and got to know the jungle, after that, I don't think there was much fear at all.
Can we go on now to your staff appointment, and can you tell me the details of that, what it involved?
Well, I hadn't ever been to the Staff College. I got onto the staff by, as I said, by being a liaison officer from my battalion to brigade. That was only for 2 months, and I went as a liaison officer from brigade headquarters to divisional headquarters, and I was on divisional headquarters when it was overrun by the Japs in the Arakan in 1944. When we got back into the admin box from our headquarters, which had been in Long Chong, General Masservi set up a TAC HQ, and I was required to go to that because we were setting up a system of air supply, and this was something which was quite new, and I was one of the available people in queue who was knew the organisation of the division, and one or two of the other ones had not arrived back in the box. So from there on, I was deputising for the DAQMG, and after the division went up to Kohima, where we took part in the relief on the left flank of the 2 British division, we got back to rest, and I was then selected to go to the Staff College. Before I got there, General Masservi, who had been planning for the next phase of operations, was at ALSI headquarters, and I received a signal from him saying if I would forego the Staff College, he would make me DAQMG of the division.
He was at what headquarters?
ALSI headquarters.
Now, for the benefit of those who don't know what the admin box was, can you say?
Well, the admin box, in fact, was started off as the administrative area of the 7th Indian Division on the east side of the Mayu Range, and we set that up. In fact, as I was on the Q staff, I was largely responsible for locating all the individual units as we brought them in, and these were only administrative units at the start. We had a mule company in there, the officer's shop, and a number of RIASC, IEME, and a field company, a field park company, and that type of thing, which had been put round the an area of open jungle, but the units were put into the jungle itself. And then we got G branch to tie in the defence of the this by issuing orders in regard to what was to be done. But of course, at this time, we were well behind the Japanese lines, and there was, we thought, to be in a fairly safe area, which would not be other than a sort of a small skirmish of a Japanese fighting patrol. We didn't expect to see very much there. Later, of course, we brought in there was medium guns were brought in, heavy AK-AK guns were in, and I think about 5 or 6 Lee Grant tanks, which were of great value during the fighting. Also was brought in the 24 Indian Light AK-AK and Anti-Tank Regiment. And they, whilst they couldn't do their own particular job, they took on an infantry role, which was of great help during the time of the box.
Can you give me your own recollections of how the box came to be surrounded by the Japanese?
Yes, the Japanese sent, I think it was about 10,000 troops, partly through one of the battalions of 114 Brigade, and partly in a big hook round 114 Brigade, between the almost in the Caladan Valley, on the left flank of the division. They got these into the Tong Bazaar, and when they had been there for about 24 hours, I suppose, they then started to make an attack down onto the back of our division. They by this time were round behind the division, and one battalion came down onto divisional headquarters, which was overrun in a place called Long Chong. Most of the headquarters staff got back to the divisional headquarters. The other elements from the Japanese force went across the Mayu range and interfered with 5 Div LOC, but they were very rapidly chased off that.
What was the atmosphere and morale like inside the admin box?
Obviously, to begin with, there was considerable alarm. The general had been on in Div HQ and was brought out on a tank, and the rest of us, of course, had come down. We left the headquarters about 1200 hours. We got back into the admin box about 1800. We, as soon as we got there, we obviously started to dig in, and of course we were extremely busy, but there were quite a number of the non-fighting troops of the administrative units. They were evacuated over the over the Nakedo Pass, and they went with considerable speed.
Can you tell me how the air supply of the people inside the box worked and whether it worked well?
It certainly worked very well indeed. To begin with, of course, we didn't need a lot of supplies because we were sitting on the supplies, and the great thing to do was not to lose them to the Japs, who were expecting to be able to get hold of them and continue their assault into India with those supplies. So the major thing was to hold on to all the supplies we got. 303 ammunition was quite a large stock of it, but unfortunately part of that went up in a fire, and spent 303 bullets were going off for 24 hours at one stage. The gunners had ample ammunition there to begin with, and the main things that came in, I suppose, were food, some of which came free drop and others came down by parachute. We had to send in all the details of where the units were and what was required, and it really was merely the transfer from having them brought in by lorry to having them brought in by plane.
What about the Japanese probing attacks against the perimeter? Were they impossible to keep out?
They weren't impossible to keep out. Once they got into the main part of the Maidan of the plain, but one burst from a 300 Browning, I think it was, on a tank, settle the ones that the Japs that were coming across, so that was no problem. They did at night make inroads into a number of the areas, and the 2nd West Yorks, there were 3 companies of West Yorks, or there was the battalion less 1 company. They were the saviours of the box, actually. Every morning when there was the perimeter had been indented by the Japanese, when they'd captured parts of the perimeter, the West Yorks had to go in and recover it, put back the administrative troops who were holding the outside of the perimeter, put them back into position. And that was done, I suppose, 8 or 10 times in the first 10 days.
What about your own work? What jobs were you doing?
Well, my own work was basically being a staff officer on this TAC HQ that was set up. I had to take my usual turn as duty officer on the radio links both back to corps and on to brigade. There was a fairly full amount of work to do because also I was still a liaison officer, and from time to time either G branch or somebody else would want to find where the general had got to, and I would sometimes be sent off to with messages or with details of situations to be put to the general when he was out on somewhere on the perimeter. And so I would go out and do that. I would spend some time collecting the organising collection of the rations coming in, and as I say, the rest of the time I suppose I was doing duty officer on the radio links.
What were the main problems of being in the box as far as you were concerned?
It wasn't really a problem. I mean, it was mainly just a sort of carrying on as best you could. Washing was not difficult. We had a stream going through the box, and this is the beauty of, in a way, of fighting in the jungle, is that water is always at hand. And of course, in the Middle East, the one difficulty that you always face there was the lack of water. That, of course, never happened in Burma. You'd only got to dig down about sort of a foot or 2 feet, and you could find water.
In this battle for the admin box, there was an infamous incident in which the Japanese attacked a hospital. Did you come into close contact with that incident?
We were, I suppose, about 200 yards away from it. Yes, it was. It happened on the second night. I think the night of the 7th of February. We heard the screaming and the shouting. It has been extremely well documented in our divisional history. Colonel Berkey was our ADMS, and he was actually in the hospital at the time, and he managed to get out. And afterwards he wrote up a complete authentic history of the whole thing. But certainly the Japanese were bestial in all that they did that night. They went around killing all the well, not all, but they were killing a number of the wounded there. They killed some of the doctors, and there was an Indian doctor who managed to get away after he'd been captured, and his story also has been sort of fully put into the divisional records.
Did you go into the hospital after the attack?
The hospital